Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers. They work in many fields and can teach us the art of living, how to live in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace for us all.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the regular Maitreya program on Friday morning on Planet FM. Today we've got a couple of climate-related articles. The first one comes from predominantly from the Netherlands, and the second one from the UK, but they have global implications. So Mark Hertzgaard, who is an environmental investigative journalist, has written an article here which he's titled "Dutch Court Ruling Brings New Hope Against Climate Emergency." And he begins, "Maybe Shakespeare was wrong to urge in his play Henry VI, the first thing we should do is kill all the lawyers." Because yesterday, meaning the 26th of May in 2021, lawyers in the Netherlands won a historic case against the Royal Dutch Shell Oil Company, which carries with it the most profound implications for diffusing the climate emergency. The court has ordered Shell to bring its global operations into line with the Paris Agreement, and that goal is limiting temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius, which means Shell will have to reduce both its own and its customers' greenhouse gas emissions by 45% from the 2019 levels, and it must do this by 2030. Together with shareholder revolts, which have demanded stronger climate action from ExxonMobil and Chevron, the Dutch court ruling from the 26th of May is one of the biggest days of climate news in years. Following last week's landmark International Energy Agency report declaring all new fossil fuel development must stop for the planet to avoid irreversible climate destruction, the court and the shareholder revolts amount to a crushing repudiation of Big Oil's long-standing assertion that its profits matter more than civilization's survival. The Dutch case is particularly remarkable for three reasons, says Roger Cox, a lawyer for Friends of the Earth, which brought the case with 17,000 plaintiffs. Firstly, because it is the first time a judge has ordered a large polluting company to comply with the Paris Climate Agreement. Secondly, because the judge held that the Friends of the Earth Society in emissions reduction takes priority over the financial harm that Shell might suffer as a result of the ruling. And third, and possibly the most far-reaching, Shell must slash not only its direct emissions, but the company's indirect emissions, the gases that millions of customers around the world release when they use Shell's product. Climate activist Greta Thunberg has observed this latter provision is what makes the court ruling such a game changer. If other countries apply the same logic, fossil fuel companies will have to leave much of their product in the ground. And this is just as climate science says, it is imperative. For now, the court ruling carries legal force only within the Netherlands, and although the judge ordered Shell to cut emissions at once, the company is, of course, appealing the ruling. Meanwhile, shareholder rebellions against the managements of ExxonMobil and Chevron have flashed an additional signal of public impatience with the intransigence from Big Oil. The annual votes that shareholders of publicly owned companies cast almost always rubber stamp management's position. But at Exxon, at least two of management's candidates for the company's board of directors were defeated. The opposition was spearheaded by a hedge fund called Engine Number One and by pension funds from California and New York. The fate of two additional board seats was unclear, the vote being still too close to call. It is a landmark moment for Exxon and for the industry, says Andrew Logan of the non-profit investor group Ceres, speaking to New York Times. How the industry chooses to respond will determine which companies thrive through the coming transition and which companies will wither. All in all, the climate story has taken a decisive turn. Big Oil's fortress walls, which for decades have been the strongest obstacles to climate action, may finally be crumbling. And for journalists, these developments present countless new angles and vividly illustrate why it's crucial not to silo climate coverage on the weather or science beats. Leaving fossil fuels behind and rapidly shifting to renewable energy sources will carry enormous economic, political, social, and even cultural ramifications, which journalists must make clear to the public and to policymakers alike. As we often say at Covering Climate Now, climate change is the defining story of our time, and now is the time for newsrooms to tell it as vigorously and rigorously as we can. And these are the words of Andrew Logan of the non-profit investor group Ceres. So this story has been republished as part of the Covering Climate Now, a global journalistic collaboration, of which Common Dreams, which we get so many stories from in Share International magazine, and it's all in part to strengthen coverage of the climate story. And you can see more at Covering Climate Now. Our second article is by Graham Peebles, who has written a number of articles for Share magazine, and it's about net zero emissions. So the new political slogan, which is chanted by governments and business leaders, desperate to be seen to be taking the environmental energy, the environmental emergency seriously, is net zero emissions. Of the nations pledging to hit zero greenhouse gas emissions no later than 2050, only 20 have made legal commitments to do so, including Sweden, Austria, Bhutan, Costa Rica, Denmark, European Union, Fiji, Finland, France, Hungary, Iceland, Japan, Marshall Islands, New Zealand, Norway, Singapore, Slovenia, and the United Kingdom, while another 20 countries, which include the USA, are drafting policy documents, leaving 100, including China, which are mulling it over. But many people suspect, like other catchy lyrics, the net zero song which governments and corporations are singing lacks substance somewhat, and that corporate politicians, with their short-sighted policies, have no real intention of taking the radical steps needed. John Kerry, the US climate envoy, said recently, you don't have to give up quality of life to achieve some of the things we want to achieve. He was interviewed by the BBC recently, and he dismissed suggestions that changes in American lifestyle and reduction to the colossal levels of consumption were needed. The American public, and presumably the overindulgent everywhere, according to Kerry, can have their cake and eat it too. But habitual, irresponsible consumerism by rich, comfortably off nations is the underlying cause of the environmental emergency. If the fundamental changes needed to achieve net zero are to come about, the poison of complacency, which affects those in power, political and corporate, needs to be cut, and urgently. It is the man-made greenhouse gas emissions which are causing the planet to heat up. Emissions must be purged from our atmosphere in order to meet commitments made in the 2016 Paris Climate Accord, which says to limit average global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. However, even if net zero is achieved, there's no guarantee that the warming will be limited to 1.5, and whatever increases occur, they will not be uniform across the planet, because the North and South Poles, for example, are already heating up more quickly than others. Since 2017, according to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, global ground temperatures have increased, despite warnings, between 0.1 and 0.3% or degrees, I beg your pardon, between 0.1 and 0.3 degrees per decade. Natural weather patterns have been completely disrupted because of this level of warming, which has resulted in the melting of polar ice caps. Rising sea levels, frequent and intense heat waves, floods and droughts. And even if net zero is achieved and if global temperatures are limited to 1.5, the projected impact will still include ocean warming and acidification, and it will impact a wide range of marine organisms and in ecosystems, as well as agriculture and fisheries. And the majority of warm water coral reefs that exist today will disappear. This is according to the IPCC, the International Panel on Climate Change. Malaria and dengue fever will increase. Poverty and disadvantage are expected to increase for many nations. There will be risks for coastal tourism, particularly in subtropical and tropical regions. And small islands are projected to experience multiple interrelated risks. And while these are all shocking forecasts, they are suspected to be conservative predictions, which makes it worse again. To support companies and countries, the United Nations Climate Change Agency has set up Race to Zero, which is a climate campaign to rally leadership and support from businesses, cities, regions and investors. Over 2,300 businesses in 708 cities have already signed up. And together with 120 countries around the world, they could form what the United Nations describes as the largest ever alliance committed to achieving net zero carbon emissions by 2050. If this target is to be reached, a revolution within the sectors that produce the most greenhouse gas emissions is needed, and this requires a major shift in focus within governments and businesses, as well as changes in collective behaviour. Energy production accounts for around 70% of total emissions, followed by food production at just over 33%, consumption and waste following that. The UN Food Agency reports that the world's food systems are responsible for more than one-third of global man-made emissions. This includes deforestation, agricultural production, packaging, and waste management. Animal agriculture contributes around 12% of this total, and global food waste accounts for a third, which accounts for a third of all food produced, is responsible for 8 to 10% of greenhouse gas emissions. So moving to renewable sources of energy production, including solar, wind, hydroelectric and biogas, which are even now less expensive than fossil fuels, is essential if the sector is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And we're talking about here the energy production. Although countries vary, the trend is positive. In Germany, 46% of power production for 2020 came from renewables, which has resulted in a decrease in greenhouse gas emissions in Germany of 42% compared with the 1990 levels. In Sweden, where over half of energy production of power now comes from renewables, the structure of power production is also changing. Smart grids are turning Swedish homes into power-making prosumers, so that's a producer-consumer, with photovoltaic solar panels, thermal energy storage and heat pump systems being installed in residential buildings, an energy grid connecting them, which is helping to charge electric cars overnight. In the UK, production of 42% of power from renewables came in 2020, which is slightly more than their 41% of fossil fuel. So China, which emits the largest percentage of greenhouse gas emissions, although if you take into account the per capita ratio, the US is still by far the biggest emitter. China aims to hit peak greenhouse gas emissions by 2030 and neutrality by 2060. In 2020, nearly 30% of total electricity consumption is said to have come from renewables. At the lower end of the scale, in the US, only 11% of energy comes from renewables, with 80% coming from fossil fuels. So India, per capita emissions are low, but they are rising. Their involvement is crucial to the evolving global total. Currently about 10% of energy production comes from renewables, and that is up from 6% in 2014. And along with China, the EU, America and India, these countries have the biggest greenhouse gas emissions worldwide. I think Brazil is responsible for greenhouse gas emissions, but not because of production, but because of deforestation. Individuals cannot determine energy production, but we can decide where we buy our energy from and participate in pressuring government and corporations to move quickly to renewables. So, such diligence should govern not just decisions on energy supply, but on all consumer commitments and lifestyle habits. And look, I'm going to finish there. That article was by Graham Peebles. You can see more from more about that in the Share magazine for July, August. And we'll just leave it there and say thanks for listening and catch you next time.